This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Oh boy, oh boy, I get to talk to my Prince Charming right now. I'm so excited to welcome back to Joy on Paper, Crispin Boyer. Hi, Crispin.
Hi, Patsy. It's always a pleasure being here. It's the highlight of my morning.
Oh, well, it starts me off in such a good mood when I know that I'm going to be talking to you because you are really my Prince Charming. I think you are so delightful. And this, now,
likewise.
You know the new book, of course, it's Zeus the Mighty, the epic escape from the underworld, book four of this wonderful series. Now, every time I say this is the best, well, but this one, I got such a kick out of it. It's so funny. And some of the writing just is going to stick with me forever. And one of the lines that I just love is, dig, war dog, dig. I like it. That is so good. That line and the excitement that you are able to accomplish in writing this story about these Olympians. From a pet shop. I'm reading the book and I got so excited about them landing up in the underworld and how they're going to escape. You have to tell us about it, but really the writing is, it's so good. It's like the best. Anybody who is writing for kids, you're so smart. Well, I know you're a prince, and are you calling from Hawaii, by the way?
I am, yes. I'm in Hawaii. Yes.
Okay, well.
But, you know, I grew up in St. Petersburg, so you're right. It is, that area is a great place for writers. So.
Oh, it is. It is. And the weather's so gorgeous. You and I really shouldn't rub it into all of our friends up in New York City. The poor things. No. And my brother had 62 inches of snow in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
even an igloo now.
Exactly.
Okay.
Well, where do we start with this? Tell us about, you know, this, the whole idea of what you came out with for Zeus is so clever. But this particular book is just, it's so much fun.
Oh, thanks so much. I'm glad you enjoyed it. You know, each of the books in the series is a challenge because it's about these animals in a pet shop that believe that they're actually Greek gods, and they see the world around them as being ancient Greece. And like you said, you know, in this book, they end up going to the underworld. So, and every book, it's a new challenge of how to expand their world to take in, like, you know, what could represent the underworld in you know, Zeus, the real world of this pet center that's in the, you know, Athens, Georgia. And the crawl space underneath the pet center, I guess that could be the underworld. And then you just go from there. And then at the same time, you know, these are animals who think they're Greek gods. So you have to, they still have the same abilities as an animal. So when you talk about dig, war dog, dig, that's, you know, that's the Ares, the god of war, who's a pug. And of course, one of his powers would be that he can dig because he's a dog. So it's just all these different aspects that I have to figure out with each book. And it's fun, but it can be challenging.
Well, I can see it, but you managed to create this atmosphere in the pet shop that anything is possible. And sometimes I'm reading the book, I'm thinking, you know, they really are gods. Just they can solve things. Well, it's wonderful.
Oh, well, that sounds great. Sounds like my mission's accomplished. I mean, they believe that they really are gods, and hopefully, as the readers read the stories, they kind of forget that these are just animals in a pet center. Although there is the pressure that, you know, these animals go on these adventures that last all night, but they have to get back to their cages and habitats before the owner of the pet shop comes back. So there's also, you know, even though you're kind of bought into the idea that they're Greek Olympian gods in ancient Greece at the same time, they do have responsibilities. They have to get back to their cages, the owner of the pet center is going to find out there's this funny business happening.
Yeah, they have to look all innocent and that they weren't up to an adventure all night long. And your writing, as I said, over the years, since you started this series, I've been impressed your use of language. And there are so many times that I just come across a phrase or something that you write that I think, well, this is somebody, you know, some other writer's going to use it. It is so original, and it is so, for me, you know, because I read a lot of books, when I come across something that I hadn't heard before or hadn't read before, it's just so much fun. And one of the ones I liked was when Ares wiggled his meatloaf-shaped body. I love that. I'd never heard anybody describe anybody with a meatloaf-shaped body, but, you know, that would work for a lot of people, too.
Yeah, I think so. I think it works especially well with this dog that's a pug. Whenever I see pugs, I kind of think they look like, you know, like a little wrinkled meatloaf or something.
Well, I have a feeling this phrase is going to turn up in thrillers, in cozy mysteries, you know, romance stories, those rom-com.
If you happen to see someone else, please let me know, because I'll be thrilled to hear about a meatloaf-shaped body in a romantic comedy.
Wouldn't that be? Absolutely. I know that there are some romantic comedies out there where that would really hit the spot. I think it's terrific. You're so clever.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I guess the only person I can think of that had a meatloaf-shaped body would be the artist known as Meatloaf, who recently passed away. The late Meatloaf, I guess, would own having a meatloaf-shaped body.
Well, I think there are some other characters. If you ever go sit around some bars, you'll see some. Not that I sit around bars anymore. Those days are gone. Nobody sits around anywhere anymore. But I guess you're still masked over there in Hawaii.
Yeah, there's still a mask. I've been wearing a mask for so long, I just kind of used to it. Although, you know, I live on a farm, so I really don't even use it very often. So it's just me and my wife and the animals, and we just have our own little community here.
Well, it's your kingdom. It's your kingdom. I think of it as your kingdom because you are a prince, and you have to write about your kingdom one day.
You know, what's interesting is one of the animals in the series, Hermes the hen, is based on one of our chickens that we have in our flock. So they are actually making their way into the stories. I don't have a hamster. I don't have a dog. I don't have any fish, but I do have a hen, Hermes. So.
And I think you have some ducks too. Do you have?
I have geese. Yeah, I've got four geese.
Four geese. Oh, great. Well, you're one with nature over there. But, you know, one of the things that people will say to me, you know, they're starting to write, and so often they'll say, well, I'll start with a kid's book. And I always say, forget that. Those are the most difficult. And they'll say, well, you know, sort of a middle grade. I said, no. You don't understand. Middle grade books, to capture kids, you have to be a really fine writer. And you, your use of language, how you use, you know, words, I think the kids just will sort of gather this vocabulary by osmosis simply from reading your words.
Oh, thanks. I've been a kids writer for so long, and it wasn't so much that I set out to be a writer for a young audience. I think just maybe that was always my writing style, and I just happened to find my audience with like National Geographic Kids. And you know, my editors they'll tell me sometimes it's like a word I'm using is, they feel like too, as they call it, high or too complex, and then I'll turn it down a little bit. So there is, you know, my editors help keep everything in check too. But I'm glad that. And, you know, I have friends, too, that say they want to write kids' books. And it's like, okay, I'm not going to discourage them. But I don't think it's as biggest thing to think that's an easy audience to capture, and you kids are smart.
Oh, they are. And I mean, when you use phrases like Zeus's brow furrowed, the kids will get it, and this is so wonderful for building their imagination, for making them think, and the way you write, that it's all sort of blends together in a context that, you know, kids will, you lead them into the situation so that they can imagine it. And that's why, you know, a writer who can grab a kid's imagination is a precious thing.
Oh, thank you. And, you know, I get help. The books are illustrated. So if that also helps, you know, if I can't paint the picture with the words, then the illustrator can literally paint the picture by painting the picture. So I do get help from having illustrated stories, too. And in that way, you know, kids can kind of visualize what's happening. And sometimes the illustrations, you know, those happen as soon as I turn the manuscript, and that's like another 6-month process of refining the illustrations. And sometimes the illustrator will create something in the scene that I think, well, that actually looks better than what I wrote. So then I'll go back and tweak to what I wrote to match the illustration. So it's really nice to be in a collaborative environment like that.
And your use of language is so great, like Bugcropolis. And I love that one. Zeus, Deuce. I thought that, you know, all of these little things that you create, it's so wonderful.
Thank you. Yeah, I put a lot of thought into it, so I really appreciate it. Sitting around thinking, what if Zeus made a copy of himself, which is who Zeus Deuce is, what would he call it? And that sounds good. Something catchy, something snazzy. And it, you know, maybe it didn't make the kids chuckle when they read it.
Well, it made me chuckle when I read it. I love it. I love all these little twists and turns you do with language. You make it fun. The book is so much fun. I really hope that, you know, everyone, if you know a kid, this book is, well, the whole series is just wonderful. This is book 4, and we have, before that, we have The Quest for the Golden Fleas, which I love, The Maze of the Menacing Monitor, and of course, Trials of Harry Cleese. So, you know, all of them, your play with words, your wonderful vocabulary that you've included in these books. These books are really great, and I hope that, you know, we're heading into this time now where kids are going to be able to, you know, perhaps have a regular summer, but it's so wonderful to keep them reading all through the summer. Start them, you know, this book, they're standalone, so you can start here, and every kid who reads this book will want to go back to book 1. You've done a wonderful job, Crispin. Really, you capture the essence of the Olympians and make, I think, the kids will forever have this idea that, yes, they can learn more. They can learn, you know, the adult version of the Olympians. But you've made it fun to start with.
Oh, thank you so much, Pat. And it's always a pleasure to come on and talk about it and talk about the process. And the next book, I've already written the 5th book, and it's off to the illustrator. So hopefully you'll have me back, and we'll talk about that one and see where the Olympians go next.
Absolutely. Now, what's the website you want people to go to?
You can just go to ZeusTheMighty.com, and that'll pretty much give you everything you need. You can see where to buy the books. You can listen to the podcast inspired by the series. You can play some games. You can learn more about Greek mythology at ZeusTheMighty.com.
ZeusTheMighty.com. It is a great website. And I love that you have the games. I love that you have more in-depth things for the children to do. You are really a Prince Charming, and I am so happy that you are enjoyed on paper today.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, Kathy. Thanks so much.
Okay. And have fun with all your animals and out there in Hawaii. We'll be thinking of you. Okay? Bye-bye.
Thanks very much. Bye.
All right. Oh, I love this book, Zeus the Mighty. If you know any kids in your life, you must get them this book. This is so much fun. And the entire series is just so much fun. And of course, it's a Nat Geo book. When I tell you it's a Nat Geo book, the first thing that should come into your mind is quality. Nat Geo books are such high quality. The production values are so great. The cover, lovely, lovely hardcover, beautiful illustrations. The paper feels so nice. I love books that have nice paper. And there's just so many, you know, when you get a book as a kid and you really get into it, like, for example, so many of us who got into either Nancy Drew, Cherry Ames, the Hardy Boys, of course. And I still have all of those books, by the way. I still have all my Cherry Ames books, Nancy Drew, and the Hardy Boys, because they're important. And I love to just look at them. So this series by Nat Geo that they have put out for kids all over the world to really learn about the Olympians and just have fun reading. It's a wonderful book. And by the way, I want to remind everyone, I've talked about this before, that if you have time and you have some spare money, order one of these books or all of these books, there's four in this series, and send it to a children's hospital near you, or to St. Jude's, or to Shriners, because the children in the hospitals need books. All you have to do is go, you know, on Amazon, find out the address of the hospital you want to send the books to, and you send it directly there. So it's no hassle way to do something really, really wonderful for kids, because nowadays with, you know, during this pandemic, they have not shared books between children. Most of the hospitals used to have these carts where they'd go from bed to bed and let the kids, you know, share books. They don't do that anymore. So obviously, the hospitals are short of kids' books, and they really, really appreciate if you send. As a matter of fact, one of my wonderful listeners donated 80 books of his, and he's a writer, and I want to thank him so much, Kevin B. Edward, for donating to hospitals all over his area. And you can do the same thing. Go to Amazon and order a book and send it to a hospital. Now, before I go to commercials, I want to say one thing. I know all of you are probably going to go crazy when you see your electric bill this month. I was even shocked at mine, and it's not bad because, thank goodness, I have good windows, which I got a few years ago. Because if I didn't have good windows, my bill would be, I think, $500-$600. But with the new windows, wonderful windows, my bill is not, still, it's high compared to what it normally is, but that's, you know, we've had a cold spell here in Florida. But oh boy, having good windows is so important. And I want to tell you that, you know, if you are really thinking of a way to save money, you should go to my sponsor. We're going to have his ad in a little while. It's GoEHS is the www.goehs, and that's where you have to go. And they have everything there for windows and insulation, roofs, fix your roof, get rid of all those leaks in your house, and they will do an analysis for you and how to save money. So it's not just the solar panels that you can get from them, but you can get insulation, you can get windows, and it's just a wonderful way to save money, and everybody's going to need to save money right now with the way things are going. So that we're going to have that commercial right now, and then I'm coming back. I have a wonderful, fascinating author coming up. Oh, let's play a book buzz. I want to play
this
one
is
book buzz.
Rita Rowe reporting for Joy on Paper with today's book buzz. If you are looking for a mystery that you won't be able to put down, then I have just the book for you.
Be My Ghost, a Haunted Haven Mystery Book 1. Cozy mystery fans, you'll be thrilled with Carol J. Perry's Be My Ghost Book 1 in her new Haunted Haven mystery series set in Florida. Maureen Daughtry is a smart, forthright protagonist of this exceptional paranormal cozy. As Publishers Weekly notes in their starred review, Maureen is a breath of fresh air in the cozy world. No ruminating on her looks or past tragic loves, no drowning her sorrows in cookies and cake. It all starts on a cold and rainy day in Boston when Maureen's career as a sportswear buyer hits a snag just before Halloween, when the department store declares bankruptcy. The former buyer of the year needs to start job searching, and fast. Salvation comes when she receives a mysterious inheritance. An inn in Haven, Florida, a quaint scenic town on the Gulf of Mexico, hidden away from highways and theme parks. The letter from the lawyer doesn't explain why someone named Penelope, Josephine Gray, would leave her a century-old Haven House Inn. Should she pick up and head south? Why not? Finn, her golden retriever who flunked guide dog classes because he's too friendly, would probably like to get some fun in the sun. Better than walking the cold and wet streets of Boston in October. Maureen hopes it will be a fresh start. She doesn't know what to expect, but what the heck? It's an adventure. So she packs up her car, and with Finn, riding shotgun, and a box of Cane's Donuts between them, she heads south. From the way Finn's wagging his tail, it looks like he approves of the move. The lawyer didn't tell her much, just that over the years, many famous people vacationed in Florida, and many of them stayed at Haven Inn. When she pulls up to the old place, she is enchanted by the rocking chairs on the front porch. But within hours, before she can even unpack her bags, Maureen discovers a prominent ghost hunter's lifeless body on the inn's front porch. What was he doing there? Not the welcome she expected. Worse, soon the police have their eyes on her as a suspect. She has no friends in Florida to help her, but some of the inn's everlasting tenants in the form of ghosts offer their otherworldly talents in order to help her solve the mystery. The ghosts, in a refreshing departure from most paranormal cozies, don't take center stage in entertaining subplots such as her efforts to discover why Miss Gray left her the inn keep the pages turning in this fast-paced cozy. The Haunted Haven series will beguile and bewitch readers, and have them eagerly looking forward to further adventures with Maureen and, of course, her pal Finn. Look forward to more fun and mystery in glorious Haven, Florida.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome back to Joy on Paper. And I am so happy to welcome my next guest, Lynn Hightower. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Patsy. How are you?
Oh, wow. This is exciting. We are going to be talking. I love the title, The Enlightenment Project. Everyone needs to be enlightened, I think. It's like, oh, boy, what are we going through? So where do I start with this book? First of all, I want to say that I'm just a sucker for any book that has a doctor story in it, because I fell in love with the when I first read Coma the first time.
Oh, yeah, that's such an awesome book, isn't it?
It's so awesome. And after that, I any book with a doctor that I love. But this one, wow, you really captured this guy.
Do you have a crush on Noah? Just tell me the truth.
Yeah.
I mean, he's crush-worthy, isn't he?
Whoa, you came up with this fantastic idea. I love the way you've written it. So tell us about this story. I don't know what to tell people. It's, in a way, there's lots of surprises along the way, but tell us what you'd like to say about this wonderful book.
Okay, thank you. You know, well, number one, I'm a thriller writer, so I write about what scares me. And this one has twists and turns that you're not going to see coming, I hope. And if you do, well done. Write me on my website and tell me. You know, Patsy, have you ever known anybody who is possessed?
Well, I don't know. I'm thinking I am sometimes, but I don't know. Not as bad as this one, but little.
And nobody's. Well, let's face it. How would you know? No one's going to admit it.
Oh, that's true. You never know.
Well, I mean, Noah was possessed when he was a child of 11, and he worked with a very young priest named Perry Cavanaugh, who got him free of all that oppression and all of that, and. But it, for him, it's a very shameful secret. He's embarrassed about it. He doesn't know why it happened to him. And he carries a lot of childhood trauma with that. But what I don't think he realizes until this very spiritual and thriller journey he takes in this story is how it built a great deal of resilience and how it makes him very compassionate. They're a very unusual neurosurgeon in that he brings a great deal of compassion to his patients, okay, because he's been through something that was so horrific to him. And he starts a research project called the Enlightenment Project. Okay, what I found out when I was researching this book was how many neurologists advise their patients to meditate. Lots of them do, and they can prove how helpful it is with, you know, just with an MRA. They can show you in your brain how much it helps you to meditate. But, you know, as Noah will tell you, are you really going to tell people to sit cross-legged, say and think of nothing? Because that doesn't work for any of us, okay? And if it works for you, well done. You're fabulous. But Noah wants to cut right to the chase and create enlightenment on demand by stimulating the neurons in your brain. And he's mapped out all across the brain anything that stimulates our spiritual process, okay? And what I found out when I did research is that we are hardwired for spirituality. And it's almost a survival characteristic. So Noah does this, and the results are phenomenal. Patients with chronic depression, patients with addiction, they're helped just by building their own ability to navigate these things. On the other hand, it also opens the door to a dark side. And that is when his patients start getting in trouble and his family starts getting in trouble. No good deed, right?
Exactly. Well, you just captured him so nicely. I love from the minute I started reading, and he's in the OR, and you put us there, and
thank you.
I loved it. I just I sort of held my breath. He's doing surgery, and you know, it's just that alone it was exciting. And then, well, I think you've done a wonderful, wonderful piece of writing here. Which, by the way, I have to mention, I want to mention right off the top, that you got a blurb from somebody like, whoa, excuse me.
Child, isn't he awesome?
Well, yeah, he is. You know, he's been on Joy on Paper for his birthday for the past bunch of years. He does a one-hour birthday interview. And
he,
yeah,
great speaker. I love hearing him talk.
Oh, he's wonderful.
Know, believe it or not, I gave him a blurb for his very first novel, The Killing Floor.
No, I didn't realize that.
I did. I can't take credit for his success, but when I got the book, I was just blown away. I thought, oh, this guy. I mean, he's got voice, he's got delivery. So I was thrilled. So I just was so happy when I said, do you think you might, and, you know, if you have time, and he was so nice about it. He's just awesome.
Oh, he is. Oh, well, this is so wonderful. How did that book get to you? Was it, you were the same publisher? What?
His editor knew me. He said, I've got a book, but I've got a fabulous book by a really good writer, and I'd love you to give him a blurb. And I read it, and I said, oh, please, yes, I would love to have my name on this book at the back telling you how great it is, because it is really great. So, yeah, no.
Oh, this is fantastic. Wow, you are, that's amazing. What a connection. And, of course, he loves this book. And when he praises a book, you know, first of all, I know him, you know, that he actually reads the books that he blurbs. You know, he really knows the book.
And talks to me about it. And, I mean, he just, it was a big thrill for me because I was like, oh, he got it. He gets it. He liked it. I'm just, you know, I can die happy now.
Oh, well, I think it's amazing. It's, you know, sometimes these things are so, isn't wonderful, the sort of golden threads that connect us to people. That mm-hmm. here you were, you know, he was just starting off and had no track record, and you gave him a nice blurb, and then it's just over the years, this thread, it's a magic tapestry that's created with writers.
Magical. And I have to say that when the Amazon Prime Reacher came out recently, that series.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we had just been sucked in with a snow and an ice storm. So my giant German Shepherd and I sat on the couch and we binged watch Reacher. But, you know, to keep the dog happy after every episode, I had to suit up for the snow and the ice and go in the backyard and throw balls around and try not, you know, have a little bit of traction out there. So we had a great weekend.
Oh, that's fantastic. I think it's, well, I binged watched it too, but I've...
Cause you're not, you know, it was just compulsive.
Oh, it was. And of course, it was so nice, you know, that this Reacher is, you know, looks like what...
Oh, he's so awesome, isn't he?
Oh my gosh, what a guy, what a hunk.
You know, he saved the dog, which, you know, made me very happy.
Yes.
Leo was very pleased about that.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, he's the right, you know, of course, Lee is not as bulky as the actor now, but he's wonderful. I think he's did a great job and captured, what I love that he captured the humor that is part of Lee Child's writing.
And the attitude was, there was so much confidence, so much humor, so much, you know, I'm going to do what I'm going to do. I don't really care what you do. And that is that's so much that character. So I actually loved that.
Yeah. Well, that is Lee Child. Fantastic. Fantastic. So I love this connection that you have with him.
Yeah.
And one of the things is when he compliments you, you know that it really comes from the heart. And so he saw this, what you mentioned here, that there's layers here. There's all sorts of twists and turns that make this for a very exciting read.
Thank you. Yeah, that was the plan. And also, you know, as it unfolded, it was just like, oh, wait. And I was doing research all through the book, and I kept finding out things that astounded me. I mean, how mainstream exorcisms are. Exorcists are on YouTube. It's accessible. You can go listen to what they have to say. They get texts from demons. that just blew me away, and I was like, there is no scenario in which I would want a text from a demon. I've got to tell you, no thank you.
Yeah, no thank you. But you did do a lot of research. I'm sure that, you know, part of this was really talking to the doctors, getting an understanding of how the brain works. And just recently...
I studied neurosurgeons up one side and down the other, and they are fascinating because, you know, the first time I thought about something like that, opening the door to the dark side, came from a book I read by a neurosurgeon. And I'm like, oh, as soon as I read that, I'm like, okay, this is very cool. You know, you've got insight. I'm going to run with this. Yeah.
And they are mapping the mind. They just recently mapped the mind of somebody who was dying, and it was quite amazing.
Yeah, and you know what? They just, at Stanford Medical School, they just came up with a new protocol for chronic depression. It's a 5-day accelerated protocol, which is exactly what Noah was doing.
Wow. Wow. It's nice. You know, it's always nice to sort of be at the cutting edge of something.
Yes.
and it's very timely.
It is. It all just came together. And because I'd been researching what they were doing, and that's how I came up with the Enlightenment Project.
And all this, you know, of course, you are... you know, an amazing writer. So the book just flows. You have all these, as you said, twists and turns and depth to it that makes it a wonderful
journey, isn't it? It's not just the thrill, which is definitely there, I hope, but it's a very spiritual journey for Noah, and it's you know, he keeps this secret from his wife, and she is so crushed and hurt. And she just feels like, well, you didn't trust me. And if you didn't tell me the truth about something that's so crucial to your life, what else haven't you told me the truth about? And it creates a huge schism in their marriage. And a lot of the story is them finding their way back and falling in love again, which I thought was incredibly romantic. I really enjoyed that.
Well, you're good with romance. You know, all your thrillers are good with always having a nice romantic element. So this book, of course, came out just now. It's a wonderful, it's an escape into something where you're still thinking and you're still learning and you're still, but you're not sort of the immediate horrors of the pandemic.
Because that's why I write. I don't want to live in the real world 24 hours a day, and I don't think readers do either. I think people have long, hard days. And they need you to sweep them up into a story that just grabs hold of them. And you get, I think, delivery, story delivery, reader payoff is hugely important, okay? So I'm going to scare you. I'm going to thrill you. I'm going to make you fall in love. I'm going to make you worry. I'm going to make you laugh. I'm going to make things play out in a way that you don't expect, but that you are happy about by the end of the book. That's the goal. Anyway,
and you achieve it. Well, you've achieved it for quite a few years. You are, of course, the author of a wonderful series, the Sonora Blair series, which I love.
Sonora, I love her, don't you?
Oh, I do. And of course, you won the Seamus Award. I think you had the best first private eye novel.
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
So I'm so shocked. I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't even have, you know, anything intelligent ready to say. Just like, Joe was just sitting there listening, and I was very thrilled, very thrilled.
Well, I particularly like the Sonora Blair series. One, because, I don't know, I just got captured by the whole idea of, first of all, I liked that there was a Cincinnati police detective who, you know, you never hear anybody about anybody from Cincinnati, so I found that fun. I know
a regular town, a regular cop, a regular person like all of us.
Exactly. And I remember in book, I think book 4 maybe, I don't remember which book, The Debt Collector?
Oh, The Debt Collector. Oh, that was one of my favorites. That's near and dear to my heart.
Well, you know, I remember I sort of collect whenever I see an author use the word joy, I always make a note of it. So I have like pages and pages of you know, where joy has, the word joy has been used in a book or in a story, and in that your main, your character at the beginning is a woman named Joy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that that was based in part on a true crime that happened when I was in college, and it haunted me all of my life. And when I started The Debt Collector, I decided, okay, yeah, I'm going to write about this, because I just found it so compelling.
Well, it, and the book is compelling. Tell us a little bit about that series. We have some time, so I can also push something besides. I'm going to push, of course. You know, right now we're talking about the Enlightenment Project, which is released today. And that's, well, yesterday, no, on Tuesday, I think, right?
Yeah.
But wonderful. So it's a great book to read. We don't want to give too much away, because one of the nice things about this book is you get into it. It's told in the first person. It starts off with the doctor in the operating room. And then right from day one, I mean, the moment, page one, right from page one, you start caring about Noah and you want to know more. And it's a wonderful, wonderful escape piece of fiction that I hope people will get. And then when they've read that, I hope they'll go to a couple of your series.
Yeah, that would be great. No, Sonora, you know, she's a single mother with two kids and a three-legged dog. You know, ever after I wrote that, people would come to my house and go, your dog has four legs. Like, that's true. I'm sorry you're disappointed. Otherwise, it was very much like my golden retriever at the time. I was a single mother with three kids. And I had a golden retriever that everybody called the nanny, because she raised the kids, she and I. We were partners, right? And when I started it, I wanted it to be a realistic single mom who was a really good cop, okay? But, you know, she also had kids to feed and things to do. And her partner had a very sick child, so she's always covering for him. So he can go to the hospital and sit with his daughter, okay? And they fight over... they fight over who gets what color candy they've got, which I think is just very realistic, because a friend of mine and I, he and I used to fight over that, you know. I want the red ones, I want the pink ones, I want the yellow ones, so to me it was just very realistic.
Well, when it comes to Jelly Bellies, I get the licorice ones.
Oh, you can have those. I want the red ones. You know, and I just decided to turn things around. I had a female serial killer who was in Flashpoint, was the first one. And she was so lethal, all right? She was just brutal. And it wasn't anything anybody did to her. She was born, she's just a born psychopath, you know? If you're talking about the brain, all of her little pleasure neurons go off whenever she is, you know, doing something horrible. And her victims, you know, were all really great men. There was a big trend then, whenever men were killed off in a novel, it was just a thing for a while, that they deserved it. You know, I'm like, nah. These are great guys. They don't deserve to die. This is a serious tragedy, okay? So I really had a lot of fun just flipping everything around.
Yeah, that's, I like that. Sometimes you get into a book and it is so stereotypical, so it's just so boring.
Yeah.
And there aren't any of these sort of flash points where you say, oh yeah, that's good, that's a good moment there, and you sort of appreciate
writing. I'm hoping that it's doing that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the fun of being a writer. Go for it. Don't, you know, just let your mind explode. And well, obviously your mind explodes a lot.
My mind is always exploding, because I always want to take it, all right, we've seen exorcisms, you know, we've seen all of these things. I want to take it to the next level, and I want it to go somewhere you don't expect, that's going to thrill you and keep you moving. And because I get, you know, because the research is out there. It was very hard for me to keep up. You know, it was like, wait, what? That's happening in the real world. You know, when I read that M. Scott Peck, the psychiatrist who wrote People of the Lie and all those really insightful books, spent the last years of his life doing exorcisms, I just couldn't believe it. I was just like, wait, I mean, this is real? because he, you know, he started out as a total non-believer, and he was just treating the patient. And at the end, you know, toward the end of his life, he said, "I am a complete believer now, and it's my hope that one day this is a recognized psychiatric condition." And it is. It absolutely is.
Wow. Wow. It this is what is so wonderful about being a writer, when you get involved in a subject and it takes you on this is a magical journey of research. You get so excited about what you learn, and then making sure that you put it in your book in a way that people will understand it and enjoy learning as much as you've learned.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, people who feel oppressed or possessed or just worried about it, I mean, you want to hear them out. You want to listen to them. You know, you want to know what's really going on. You don't want to, you know, there were so many years where it was like a big secret, nobody wanted to talk about it, and people made fun of it. But people, there are some people that feel tormented, and whatever is going on, they need help. Help them out.
Yeah, I think right now everybody in the world is thinking there's one person we know.
I know. If we threw it out there, do you know anybody that's been possessed? Everybody's going to say, well, I'm not going to say the name, but maybe.
Yeah, well, I think the world is thinking that. So it's fun to get into your book and really, as you said, get to know the character and get to know the story. It's an escape. I think it's an escape from today.
Yeah, that's what it's supposed to be.
And that's what it's supposed to be.
Get from your real life and go have some fun with it. That is my goal. And if you just curl up and it takes you out of your world for a while and you enjoy it, my job is done. That's the whole point of writing it, as far as I'm concerned.
And your writing, I understand you have a Victorian...
I do.
You know, I lived in England for many years, and I had a real old house, a 400-year-old house, so I can appreciate a Victorian study. Mm-hmm. Why Victorian study?
You know, I just love little, it's just a little cottage. It's not very big, and it's got like five fireplaces, those little bitty coal-burning fireplaces that I've converted so that I actually can pretty much go in any room and have a fire come on, which to me is quite thrilling. And as small as the cottage is, it's got great big tall ceilings, so it feels very open and airy. And, you know, it's just always appealed to me. And then recently I was telling somebody about my great-grandmother, who I'm named after, and I said, yeah, she had this little Victorian cottage downtown. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I thought this was new. I'm just following in the footsteps of my fabulous great-grandmother, you know. She started it. So, yeah.
Oh.
It's just a very cuddly place to curl up. I love old house.
Well, I think it's delightful. It's just, it's great to, you know, just sort of imagine you there as you're writing this really, really thrilling book, as Lee Child says, and you accomplish your job. You got the readers really into something that they will enjoy. It's a sort of one of those unexpected joys that sometimes comes into your life when you're reading. And I just want to read this so everybody will know. Lee Child says it's a spooky, suspenseful masterpiece. Ooh, isn't that nice? And super recommended by Lee Child. And I think it's...
When I got that, I was just like, oh! I don't know whether to cry or laugh or run around in circles, so I did all three.
Well, I think it's wonderful, and a wonderful connection. It's magical how we're all sort of connected. You know, I was doing research in Manchester, not
lovely,
like five blocks from where Lee Child was working when he got fired.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny how we all connect up?
It is. It's amazing. I, you know, when I realized that one day when I was talking to him, and I realized, my gosh, I mean, I'm sure I passed him in the street, or we probably sat in the same pub, because I was there working out, doing research in a library, in a very, very wonderful library, and he was there, and then you get his book. It's all just magical, all these connections we have.
That's so weird, because I was doing a publicity tour, and they shut down a bar in Manchester, invited in all the booksellers from all around the region, and mainly we all just drank and went wild. And, you know, maybe he was like a few blocks away.
Yeah. I mean, this is what's wonderful about being a writer. You go places, you do things, you see things, and, you know, it's just so much fun. It's just so much fun, and you certainly are living the dream here. Being an international best-selling author with a wonderful recommendation from Lee Child, and your book is great, and I just want to, again, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. And do you have a website you want people to go to?
Yeah.
Is there a website?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, there is. It's lynnhightower.com, and it's got my books, it's got links. It's got just, like, various fun facts about Lynn, which, you know, include the fact that I have no sense of direction and a desk obsession. And the best thing about my website, it's got a beautiful picture of my German Shepherd, and she is very photogenic.
Okay. As are you, too. Okay. Great. It was wonderful talking to you. And, again, thank you so much. Whenever you have a book release, are there going to be more Sonoras?
Betcha. I'm halfway through another one.
Okay. I look forward to it. And we'll have you back on Joy on Paper, because you are a joy to talk to. Your enthusiasm, your voice, your happiness of being a writer just shines through, and I love it.
You tell lies for a living and wear jeans to work. What's not to like?
Exactly. I love it. Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
All right. That's it. Yep, you can wear jeans to work. That's great. That's what some people actually can just stay in their pajamas. I know one writer who does stay in her pajamas until about noon. But that is not, by the way, Rita Moreau. Rita Moreau, who we played her book buzz for Carol J. Perry. Rita Moreau gets up early in the morning, just like Carol Perry does, and Mary Higgins Clark. Mary Higgins Clark also got up early at 5 o'clock in the morning, and she was determined. She became a widow, and she had to make money and feed her kids, and so she was determined, and she set herself a goal, and you can do that too. This is a wonderful thing about being a writer. Remember, 2 weeks ago, I had Eugenia Lovett West on the program celebrating her 99th birthday, and she's about to release a second in her absolutely wonderful Revolutionary War series. So you can do it too. You just have to start writing. Because remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't unless you start writing. So start writing today, and make sure that if you have a moment, go to Amazon and send a book to on one of the children's hospitals in your area, or to St. Jude's or Shriners, and make a kid happy today, because that's a wonderful thing to do. And then say something nice to somebody today, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Big Ed, for everything. And he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him, because I should have been a general. Oh, yes, I should. 500 military books. I think I have read more military books in many languages than most of the people at the military college. Yep, that's me. Okay, bye-bye now.